there's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Hello and welcome to Quickly Kevin, Will He Score? And welcome to Chapter 1 of Sweeper from the Quickly Kevin Fan Club Archives on the main feed for the first time. If you want to get all the Steve Bruce books, and we're just about to finish the third one, you can become a Quickly Kevin Fan Club member at anotherslice.com/QuicklyKevin and on your Apple Podcast app. Big news! The final series of Quickly Kevin starts on Monday, the 22nd of April, with Glenn Hoddle. But if you're a Quickly Kevin Fan Club member, it will start for you on the 15th of April. Exciting times. But for now, enjoy this, Chapter 1 of Sweeper in its entirety. Enjoy.
Now, you know him better than anybody, probably. Do you back him to score quickly, yes or no?
Yes.
Only Hatton!
No!
Hello and welcome back to the Steve Bruce Murder Mystery Specials. I'm Chris Scholl. Joining me, as always, Josh Whittacombe.
Hello.
Our resident Steve Bruce / Barnes expert, Ivo Graham.
Hello.
And the director of podcast, Michael Marden, is here.
Hello.
Here we go, Sweeper, book two.
So this is Sweeper. We did Striker, and now we come to Sweeper, which some people are saying is the best one of the trilogy. Very much the Godfather Part 2, I suppose, is the way of looking at it. Do you want to talk me through the cover, Chris, before we get going? Because obviously we will come to Chapter 1, but we should just talk through all that surrounds the book, because this is our opportunity.
It's a blue book. Sweeper! Exclamation mark at the top. Steve Bruce, or author's name at the bottom.
Sweeper in the same font, same block capitals as Steve Bruce, but in italics, yeah, with an exclamation mark as well. It's very few, I mean, you might be able to correct me on this, Ivo, you're very well read, but I think there's very few classics that have an exclamation mark at the end of their title.
I think it's only War and Peace.
But the thing that really draws your eye on the cover is the montage in the centre. So yeah. Last, the first book had... I guess I think you call this vanishing point, but in the first book, the kind of the angle made it look like there was an enormous dead stabbed player on the pitch. It was one scene. In the second book, it is a montage. So you've got four things going on in this montage. Top left, Steve Bruce, definitely Steve Bruce, with what looks like a miniature John Gorman by his side.
Stood on the touchline at a game.
Yeah, stood on the touchline.
The fact Steve Bruce is pictured, I'd say, further blurs the lines between Bruce and Barnes. Because it's rare in a fiction book cover to have the picture of the author on the cover. Had the final Harry Potter book come out with a picture of J.K. Rowling on the cover, that would have confused matters, I think. So where do you think that leaves the kind of whether Steve Barnes and Steve Bruce are different people? I'd also add that Steve Bruce looks like a photograph, whereas John Gorman, and obviously we will put this on the Instagram, at @quickly_Kevin, is it? What is it?
Quickly Kevin.
@quickly_Kevin on Instagram, we'll pop this up. John Gorman looks like a CGI or a photo, like a computer-generated assistant manager, whereas Steve Bruce looks like a photo.
But it also... The John Gorman character to his left looks like he stood next to him, but he's so short that it can't be. He can't be. There's something going on here.
Yeah, I don't understand what's going on there.
He's so vertically challenged.
But what they've done is they've just put CGI hair and a moustache on him in some like really feeble attempt to mask his identity.
So that's the picture of that. And then there's an old man leaning on a rake in a flat cap.
The old man, I would say, looks not unlike Mick McCarthy.
Yeah. But we're not claiming that's a picture of Mick McCarthy that they've altered, that they put a flat cap on, because Mick didn't want to be featured. And then there's an Israeli flag and a flag. What is that?
So I've just been hastily Googling this.
I thought it was a Serbian flag.
Yeah, I thought that was a Serbian flag.
But the Serbian flag doesn't go blue, white, red from top to bottom.
Or is that the Yugoslavian flag?
Oh, hang on a second. I think that you could be onto something here. Yeah, Yugoslavian flag is blue, white, red. But it used to have a star in the middle, not this weird crest.
It's an Eastern European country's flag. It's a Baltic flag
it's
of
Baltic
some sort
flag.
That we're unaware of.
Yes.
So already you're dealing in kind of international intrigue, post-Soviet, Eastern Bloc politics and football. So it's exciting. And then it begins with Sweeper Steve Bruce. And now, often with a sequel, they'll have, when they bring out the hardback, so they haven't got any reviews yet, there'd be on the inside cover, praise for striker, it would say. But they haven't quite got that. They've got striker, what the press said. They haven't gone far enough to say praise for striker. Okay. Michael Bobroff of the Daily Mirror writes, the former Manchester United captain is all set to take on the literary world, and he hopes to do for soccer thrillers what Dick Francis did for horse racing.
That's more the sort of promotional blurb for Striker, isn't it?
That's what you say before you read it.
Yeah, that doesn't imply Michael Bobroff has read the book, does it?
Yeah. You'll sometimes see that when flicking through an Edinburgh Fringe brochure.
Yeah.
You'll go, oh, that's not actually a review of a show, is it? That's just sort of, that's a bit of biography that sounds sort of like quite grand. But actually promises nothing. There's an... I mean, this is even looser. There's an American comic whose quote I remember was, only comics with something to say cross the Atlantic. And I was like, that's... your name's not in that quote. That's a general observation about the nature of a transatlantic career.
Peter Higgs of The Mail on Sunday writes, author Bruce scripts premiership thriller.
Mm.
Once again, that feels like a headline. That feels more like Peter Higgs has written it. I wonder if you Google that quote along with Peter Higgs, whether anything comes up.
I can tell you, no.
Okay. Imagine if you Google it, it comes up the front page.
Big front page splash.
Scoop, exclusive.
He identified the Higgs boson particle, in 2017... he spoke to the Daily Mail, who apparently also said in the late 90s that author Bruce scripted a premiership thriller, but this was more about how his life had been ruined by selfie requests since winning the Nobel Prize. So I don't know how much blurbing he was doing in the late 90s.
Do you think these are real things? Do you think these are real quotes? Ray Ryan in the News of the World, while most footballers' ability at turning to literature ends up in dull stories about a cold, wet night in Watford, Bruce has become the first modern manager to turn his hand to fiction. And it's very good too. Ray
so
Ryan...
So that's the first positive...
Yeah.
Ray Ryan News of the World. But why would he make up these people? And why would you invent quotes that weren't even sort of good?
Ray Ryan is a real person. Because he died in 2016. He is a News of the World football reporter, Ray Ryan.
The Ray Ryan quote, is that one of the first recorded instances of a sort of cold Wednesday night in Stoke sort of thing?
I don't know. It feels like... I don't know. It does feel like a... Do you think Ray Ryan, when reviewing Bruce, has coined a kind of long-standing...
You'd have to say, if he has done that, then he's achieved more... in a single sentence in terms of long-term contribution to the discourse than Bruce has in three books.
This next one's quite an interesting one. This is from John Harris of The Independent. And that can't be the John Harris that now writes Guardian articles and wrote the definitive Britpop book, The Last Party. John Harris, who's a very respected journalist of The Independent, Bruce... possesses a fertile imagination.
Well, the telling detail there is the dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, the dot, dot, dot.
That's a tried and tested trick. I would like to see where the component parts of that quote have been made up from, because I bet you they've completely twisted the intent. Like that back end of that possesses a fertile imagination, what precedes that, I think, will skew it very, very differently.
I don't think it's that strong, even if that was one long quote. Do you know what I mean? I think it could be taken either way, as it is. You don't read that and go, bloody hell. I'm delighted with that.
It's the sort of thing a teacher would say about a primary school child who was notorious for lying and telling fibs. It's just like, yeah, little Timmy, he possesses, what should we say, a fertile imagination?
Bruce has written a terrible book, and anyone that thinks it will be a literary success certainly possesses a fertile imagination.
John Woodcock of the Yorkshire Post. As captain of Manchester United, he enjoyed unprecedented success, and there's still no stopping him. A writer with a winning goal.
What does he... That doesn't even make sense.
No. Now, this is from a column called The World of Soccer in the Daily Mail. The First Division Manager of the Month is now hoping for a place in the bestsellers list. That is the weakest of all, isn't it?
That's a bit of a press release.
It doesn't say he's in the bestsellers list. It says, or that he deserves to be in the bestsellers list. It says merely that Steve Bruce hopes to be a part of it, basically underlining that he failed in his dream for the first book.
Also, why can't it be like the Premier League winner is now hoping for a place in the bestsellers list? Even his football achievement has been diminished to sort of grub up the overall quote.
Oh, man. As big a hit on the bookshelves as he has been at the McAlpine Stadium, the Huddersfield Daily Examiner.
Well, in hindsight, that's the most damning one, seeing as he was sacked from the McAlpine Stadium in 2000. As much as a failure in the literary world as he was at the McAlpine Stadium.
Astonishing. Also, that's been penned, we know, by the real-world equivalent of Harry Pickles. Okay. Chapter 1, 6 o'clock, full stop, new paragraph. Thursday, full stop, new paragraph. December, full stop, new paragraph. Happy with that kind of impactful beginning? What do you think? I like it.
Yeah, I like it. It's kind of Bukowski-esque.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah. Soon to be Christmas, crunch time in soccer.
No, it's not.
No. 6 o'clock, a chance to get home early for some quality time with the kids.
Well, hold on, he's already said it was 6 o'clock. That was the opening line.
But I like that repetition. I mean, he doesn't do it. I was hoping he'd do it at the start of every... It's slightly David Peace. Do you know what I mean? Like, that could be the damned United if every sentence was 6 o'clock. Julie, my PA, has already left. 6 o'clock, pleased to have an early finish after a series of late nights. 6 o'clock, but he doesn't do that. 6 o'clock, a chance. I think he's just messed up rather than it's a stylistic flourish. 6 o'clock, a chance to get home early for some quality time with the kids. Julie, my PA, had already left. Pleased to have an early finish after a series of late nights. I phoned my wife and children to let them know I was preparing to leave the stadium. The chairman, Sir Lawrence Brooke, wasn't in that day. He'd gone to Frankfurt on a business trip. I won't be back till the following week in the Wednesday game against Burnwick. A classic sentence that combines the real and fake geography of the world. Wouldn't it have been more exciting to see what Steve Bruce had offered as his fake German business trip? Like he keeps telling me, business is European nowadays. Oh dear, Sir Lawrence has had an absolute nightmare. In his own subtle way, he's voicing his hope that we might attain Premier League status and get into European soccer. I'd think Sir Lawrence would just, as a aging millionaire, would be quite a blunt man rather than hinting that he wants European soccer. But
yeah, also
going to Frankfurt.
I don't think it's a terrible ambition to have as a chairman.
No.
Ideally, we'd like this club to succeed, but obviously, I have to drop some pretty sensitive hints about it. Rather than intimidate the manager, I'll just tell him I'm going to Frankfurt a lot and say that it'd be nice if all of us were going to Frankfurt soon.
I'd like that too. First, I have to get the club out of the Nationwide League First Division. That's my brief here, and I know it. Sir Lawrence has allowed me 3 years to do the job. I'd like to manage it in 1 year. Some people tell me 1 year could be too soon, that we'd be straight back down again, a yo-yo club. Well, that's as may be, but I don't want to wait. Sir Lawrence has promised there'll be cash to strengthen the squad in the event of promotion. To get Leddersford back to the place of honour they left decades ago, that would really be something. Several managers have tried and failed. That was under the old dispensation. Every year promises were made, hopes raised, and every year the team and supporters were disappointed. This, I would say, is where Huddersfield and Leddersford are quite different, really. because I don't really see Huddersfield as one of those teams that knocked on the door of the Premier League for years in the 80s and 90s. I knew about them because Neil Warnock had been there before he joined Argyle, but that's about it. Now, with Town under the firm control of Sir Lawrence, with me drafted in as first team coach, hopes are again riding high. I don't want to disappoint my chairman, the club employees, the fans, or myself. I like to be a winner. I locked the door to my office. The corridor to reception, usually busy, sometimes almost chaotic, was quiet now. Before leaving, I went out to the playing area. The corridor was cold. I walked out of the tunnel. As tunnels go, it's quite short. Does he mean in football terms or in generally tunnels-wise? Like, compared to the Channel Tunnel, it's
nothing very, like that.
It's nothing like that. It's absolute. Even the Blackwall Tunnel is much longer than the tunnel at the Sir Lawrence Brook Arena or whatever it's called. Even now, at the age of 30, excitement wells up.
At the age of 30?
That must be.
What? He's claiming to be 30. What a bizarre thing to change.
That's a typo. That's got to be a typo. Excitement wells up inside me. Although I'm no longer on the playing staff, the adrenaline still surges. It was a cold Thursday evening. I looked up at the sky. It was clear I could see the stars shining brightly. Clearest of all was the planet Venus. The evening star. On such an evening, without a covering blanket of cloud. I don't know anything. I don't know enough about astronomy, but presumably that's true, is it?
Yeah, it's one of the brightest stars in the sky. Well, it's not a star, it's a planet, obviously, but yeah.
The Evening Star was also a newspaper that said Steve Bruce will be trying to turn his Football League success into literary success this year.
I turned. It was old Sam. He's a janitor and a general handyman. Lucky to have escaped being dismissed when the job appraisal exercise was undertaken shortly after Sir Lawrence took over the club. Bit harsh, isn't it?
Yeah.
Makes me wish I was still playing, Sam, I said. Age. Anno Domini. It catches up with all of us, he said.
I just thinking, like, how bad can a job appraisal go for a janitor? Like, is there shit everywhere? I mean, what are your jobs? Like, bleach the toilets, sweep up.
It feels two-faced from Barnes. That he's, like, reminiscing to Sam while also thinking he should have been fucking cut loose.
This place stinks, Sam.
Yeah. Walking around the pitch, talking about his playing days, while noting down things in his head to complain to Lawrence that Sam has missed. Age, Anno Domini, it catches up with all of us, I said. You're right there, Sam. I'm glad the other business panned out all right for you, he said. Sam was referring to the spot of bother I'd had some months earlier when I'd been under suspicion and even for a week under arrest for murder.
So are we assuming this is the first time in several months that Sam and Steve have crossed paths?
Yeah, and Steve hasn't said hello. He just said, makes me wish I was still playing, Sam.
You know, you've missed out the under arrest for murder, asterisk.
Yeah.
Bottom of the page.
And then at the bottom, this story is told in Striker by Steve Bruce. We discussed his first time around quite how mad that is in a sequel. And were other authors to have done that, it's just an incredible thing to have happened.
I'm actually going through the Harry Potter books where every time a character refers to something that's happened previously, there's an asterisk going, go back to book four for this bit. I'd never get through it.
Fucking hell, those John le Carre books about Smiley, I would be unreadable. I mean, it's pretty close as it is. But how long have you worked for the club, Sam? He smiled, but it was a grim smile. The taciturn look that comes from long experience. When he did finally answer, he said, before you was born, Mr. Barnes. Most people, at whatever level, usually call me by my first name. Sam belongs to the old school. I started here when I was 15, straight from school, and now I'm 65. You don't need a calculator to work that out. I did a quick sum.
Show off.
50 years. You've had a good spell, Sam. Retire in a couple of months, he said. I suppose I've been lucky. Never been out of work. Luckier than he knew. The new men in suits brought in to clear out the old wood that's led us for town had penciled in Sam for redundancy. There are others, too. The axe needed to fall. A few people had been spared. One was Sam. Sir Lawrence had made the decision that certain faithful old servants of the club should retain their jobs until retirement. The chairman is a very astute and successful businessman, but he also has a heart. What do we make of Steve Barnes's kind of feelings towards Sam and Sir Lawrence's kind of approach to the club?
Before, I wasn't sure whether the fact that he should have gone or he was lucky to still be there was Steve Barnes commenting on his ability as a janitor and handyman or commenting on someone else's. But this seems like Steve thinks he should have gone, but the chairman is the one that saved him. So it seems like Steve is the one that doesn't really value his ability.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It feels like Sir Lawrence has come in with a brutal approach to the club, getting rid of all of the old servants. And Steve's view is that Lawrence hasn't gone far enough.
But it's like when you make redundancies, he's going to have to replace the janitor. It isn't a sort of bloated middle management type situation. Yeah. You need a janitor. You need a cleaner and a handyman at a football club, surely. So what Steve's suggesting that we need a younger, cheaper, better janitor.
Steve's view is Margaret Thatcher actually was a bit soft on the miners.
But Michael, there's a few paragraphs before you've learned that the halls of Lettersford are just stinking of shit. Old Sam has dropped the ball and the broom.
I turned to go out in the cold. I'll lock up, Sam said. I wished him a good night. As I strode away along the passage to the main reception area, I heard a sound. At first I thought it was the door banging as Sam closed it, but the sound was accompanied by a cry. I turned and went back. Sam was lying on the floor. He was clearly in distress. He was having a convulsion. I'm no doctor, but I knew a little about first aid. Sam was thrashing about on the floor in what appeared to be an epileptic fit. I wasted no time. I knelt at Sam's side and cradled his head so that he would not injure himself against the hard floor. It was not a good time for this to happen. Everyone appeared to have left the stadium, so I couldn't send anyone to get further help. After the convulsion ceased, Sam recovered consciousness briefly, then fell into what seemed to be a deep sleep. I picked him up and carried him to the one place where I knew somebody would be on duty, general reception. At the stadium, we share the ground with a rugby league club. At 5 o'clock, both companies use the same single receptionist. It's usually a man. This evening, it was someone I didn't recognise. Sam's had a fit, I said. I lay the body on a long seat. I'll ring for an ambulance, sir, the receptionist said. No, not yet, I cautioned. But if he's had a fit... This is insane. People who suffer from epilepsy get fed up of waiting in hospital, I said. Once he comes around fully, he should be fine. I paused. Do you know him well? I don't know him at all, the man answered. I'm only here for this shift. I'm a relief from the security firm. Sorry, I don't quite understand why earlier he's pointed out that the receptionist is usually a man. And now it's just a different man.
That's very odd. I wonder whether... I mean, when we did this book the first time, we sort of pulled out quotes and moments. Now we're going through it forensically. I wonder whether this receptionist is part of this ruse that Sam is setting up, and actually he's been planted there to help.
But let's be honest, the receptionist is the man who's trying to get Sam medical help while Barnes bars this plan because he's worried that Sam wouldn't like to wake up in hospital. So you don't know his relations or his background, I said. I could have checked in personal records, but that meant a bit of hassle. It was better that I stay with Sam until he fully recovered. Remembering my first aid training, I unfastened the buttons on my shirt front. Oh, sorry, on his. Sorry, that would have been...
I light some candles and lower the lighting.
Remembering my first aid training, I unfastened the buttons on his shirt front. There was a tattoo on his upper arm. It was some kind of flag. I wasn't interested in tattoos. All I wanted was to help him breathe easier. He needed all the air he could get. Beads of sweat covered his forehead. His hands were clammy. He was like a guy in the grip of a fever. I waited and waited. Then I noticed that his breathing was becoming very shallow. He wasn't making the recovery I hoped for. His face was a deathly pallor and his lips blue from oxygen starvation. Good Lord, I said. He looks like he's had a heart attack.
The reception at this point go, OK, can we call the ambulance now, Steve? Do you think this is...
Yeah. Heart attack victims don't like to wake up in hospital. Just to be clear on that.
At this moment in time, this is manslaughter.
Yeah, bare minimum. Absolutely astonishing. that Steve Barnes has done this. Good Lord, I said, he looks like he's had a heart attack. I turned him on his back. I massaged his chest, trying to give a mild form of artificial respiration. When that had no effect, and I could see his lips becoming bluer and Sam's body colder, I tried to give him the kiss of life. Ring for an ambulance, I said between breaths. Tell them it's an emergency. The receptionist did as ordered. As ordered! The cheek of it! That's astonishing. The receptionist did as ordered while I maintained my efforts to restore Sam. The ambulance arrived in less than 10 minutes. The stadium isn't too far from the general hospital. There's a boom on the main entrance to keep out unauthorised vehicles. The boom was raised by the time the ambulance arrived, klaxons sounding urgently. I'll follow you, I told the paramedics. No one else being present, it was my duty to be as much assistance as possible, you fucking cheeky bastard. You've literally just delayed him getting to hospital by 10 minutes. In any case, the hospital is on the road out of town, the one I follow to the motorway.
Does that mean, like, oh, it's on my way home anyway?
Yeah, it does. I hadn't even noticed that. Also, Steve's following the ambulance, right, in his car to be as much use as possible. So what use does he think he's going to be when they get to the hospital? I suppose he could fill them in on what had happened. I suppose, yeah, fair enough.
But the doctor turns to him and says, how's his janitoring been recently? Oh, he's really been off the boil for quite some time. Doctor, make some notes. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Do you think he should have been let go in the great Letters from Town Cull of the summer of 97? The sad thing for Sam is, had he been let go, he'd have probably survived because he wouldn't have had Steve Barnes as the first person to find his body.
The pressure of sweeping up a football stadium when you're knocking on.
The Jag was in its usual place, outside the club reception. It's an XJ8 3.2 sports version V-Reg. As I drove past the infirmary following the ambulance, as it cut a swathe through the traffic, I wasn't thinking of power-assisted steering and speed-sensitive variable ratios. I was considering how life would be sweet 1 minute, and suddenly, without warning, we are dead. Nobody can foretell the place and hour of their death, which is perhaps as well. The important thing is to make the best of life while we can. Now I thought of old Sam fighting for his life in the back of the ambulance. We arrived. I've forgotten about this. at E&A. Emergency and accidents.
Does Steve Bruce get confused every time he says EA Sports?
That can't be... He hasn't done that by accident. Surely he's having
a... Has he done it by emergency?
Is he just, again, presenting a bit of a different world? Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I don't
know. It's so, how can you get that wrong?
It's incredible. We arrived at E&A, emergency and accidents. I pulled up behind the ambulance. The sound of the klaxon, the jumping of the traffic lights, the way in which considerate drivers made a clear way for us, all that was in vain. Sam was pronounced dead on arrival. Wow. Not a moment does Steve Barnes think. Even in retelling the story, Steve Barnes, I would leave out the bit where I said, do not take him to the hospital straight away. I certainly wouldn't include it and then totally ignore it.
All of those considerate drivers moved out of the way for us. Yeah. No one could have done anything more for Sam. Apart from me, of course, the only person to be with him for the first few minutes after his collapse.
I felt sorry for the old guy. At the same time, I wanted to get home to Cheshire before the snow came down over the Pennine Hills. But I had to tell my story several times. That's one of the problems with hospitals. Too many people take down the same information. Nurses, managers, doctors at various levels. They don't seem satisfied until they've made their own written record. I suppose they're covering their backs. If anything goes wrong, they can prove they made a record. The absolute barefaced cheek of this. After a succession of nurses and several offers of tea or coffee, a young doctor came to talk to me. What happened? I've told the nurses, I said. Tell me again. Why should I? I want to get the whole picture. I was down at the stadium. You worked there? Yes. In what capacity? Of all the young doctors in Lettersford, I had to get the one who didn't know about me.
I mean... What a narcissistic prick.
Not now.
When was the first book based? Was it like sort of December?
Yeah.
and it's been a few. It's been a few,
yeah,
months.
Few months.
So it's is it still snowing in the Pennines in February, end of February, March? I don't know enough about that area.
Yeah, I suppose maybe. Well, I suppose we'll get a feeling for when this is. Oh no, this is Christmas.
Christmas,
because it's the yeah, business yeah. time. Yeah. yeah. So how?
So how did? I mean,
so it didn't get promoted, wasn't it? It was kind of like March, April, wasn't the last book?
Yeah, so did it was, not get it was, promoted? But he wanted to do it in one season. The time scale has gone to absolute
gone
shit
mad,
here. Because this is a few months later. So I'd buy that they didn't get promoted, but this is still his first season. Anyway, of all the young doctors in Leathersford, I had to get the one who didn't know about me. I'm part of management. What is Sam's surname? Now I was getting angry. Like I've told the whole world and his uncle. I don't know. But you say you work at the stadium. Right. But I don't know everybody by name. It isn't possible. Isn't that one of the things they say about Sir Alex Ferguson? Like, that was one of the...
That he knew everyone, yeah, the grounds.
That was
the
one of the great
the
things they say about Sir Alex Ferguson is he knew the name of everybody. Like, the tea ladies is the classic example,
yeah,
isn't it?
That's because when the owners of Manchester United come in, they just didn't sack everyone that had been there for 40 or 50 years. So Ferguson had time to remember and get to know their name.
Steve Bruce, when the Glazers came in at Manchester United, he was actually disappointed they didn't get rid of more people, wasn't he? Can't
the
believe
tea,
old man
the
Ferguson.
The tea ladies were simply too... you're talking a cup of tea every minute. They weren't able to keep up with the pace of the modern tea maker.
Like I've told the whole world and his uncle, I don't know. But you say you work at the stadium. Right, but I don't know everybody's name. It isn't possible. I tried to contain my anger. Snow was falling. It was a bleak winter's evening. I had a wife and kids who complained they don't see enough of me. I must get on my way, son. But I'm only a junior houseman. But... I sighed. The last thing I needed right now was a complication in my life. Another complication, that is. Being a manager of a soccer club is difficult enough. I don't think he was an epileptic. It looked like a fit to me. I think it was an insulin coma. I checked my wristwatch, anxious to be on my way.
He's so impatient.
Is Steve... Someone's died.
If you don't care, though, don't sit there. The doctor telling you what's going on. You're just looking at your wristwatch trying to get away. Like, if you don't care, don't go to the hospital.
Is Steve Bruce the only person in the last 70 years who's used the full terminology wristwatch? If he'd written, I checked my watch, would any readers have been picturing him getting a pocket watch out to have a look?
Do you think as well, like, old Sam might be within earshot, slowly slipping away from this mortal coil? He can hear Steve Bruce making excuses to leave because he doesn't want to hang around. Like, oh, that's the end.
And the doctor continued, I don't think it was self-administered. No shit. You don't think he'd shot up too much insulin in the middle of the football pitch? Look, son, I've been very patient. I've been on duty almost non-stop for more than 48 hours, he said, and my judgment may be impaired. Give it to me in plain English, I snapped. Right, in plain English, I think the man was murdered. Chapter ends.
Fantastic.
Great to be back.
What do we think of that first chapter? I think Steve Barnes comes across the worst he's ever come across.
Yes.
He's very much back to his best / worst.
I mean, he's unlikable. He's probably the irony is, like, wouldn't this doctor... Like, I don't understand why the hospital staff aren't making more of the fact that Steve Barnes has delayed him.
They don't know that, do they?
They don't know, yeah.
Well, he seems to say that he's been taught... He's been asked under questioning various times, doesn't he? And he's... I mean, obviously, this is the question we're asking is, what does this book represent? Because Steve Barnes is reporting these facts kind of without any thought that they're incriminating in any way, if you know what I mean. I mean, I suppose that brings into question the idea of what a novel is at all. And I'm not sure this is the text to do so. But I don't think Steve Barnes seems shy about the fact that he delayed it. Because when he said, I don't think he's an epileptic, Steve Barnes has told them he had an epileptic fit. So it's not like he's then covered up his tracks.
Yeah.
I mean, this whole chapter does read a bit like a cold open. I could imagine, I think the old man was murdered. Bang, needle drop music, title sequence comes in.
Yeah.
And this feels like we're setting it, clumsily setting up what the movie is going to be about.
I think there is a good argument there that Steve Barnes he's not shy about getting down to the business end. Do you know what I mean? Like, both books do start with a bang. There's another world in which Steve Barnes has written three chapters about the mundanity of managing letters for Town. Do you know what I mean? And I think fair play to him for really hitting the first chapter hard.
Yeah, I mean, it's good stuff. It's a no messing around opening chapter. The car's in there. The sort of blame is all over the shop early doors. I'd love to learn a bit more about how the ground share with the rugby league team works, but I'm certain as to whether that's going to be explored.
That wasn't mentioned in the first book, was it?
No.
Which is odd, because, like, there's lots of stuff about who the suspects are and who's got, like, who's got access to the stadium, and suddenly you're like, well, there's a whole rugby league team here that haven't been... Because it's a murder of a footballer, no-one's thought it could come from the other team that has complete access to the stadium.
But this is one of the things that annoys me about sequels. When things happen in the sequels that are so big, you're like, well, surely that should have been mentioned in the first. Like, this old Sam character feels like he's a big deal now. It was where was he in the first? And just that the setup in reception feels really different to how it was in the first.
It's a real shame that old Sam wasn't featured in the first one. Do you think the rugby league team had any issue with the bullets chopping up the pitch in the first... We've got a play on that 3 days later and the pitch is full of bullets from the shootout.
For God's sake.
That's a good point about the receptioner, actually. Isn't there a detail in the first book about how secure the reception is? Like, there's a lock or some kind of padlock that, like, very few people have the code or access to. So what is there a second reception that just anybody can swan in and out of?
Because before you know it, Martin Afire's walking in. I don't know. It'd be nice, wouldn't it, to think that Steve Barnes had planned these all out like J.K. Rowling did. She knew the end of the last Harry Potter before she put pen to the first, of course, kind of mythically. But I feel that Steve Barnes is very much catching up on the logic as he writes. Hugely regretting setting the last one at the end of a football season and hoping no one noticed.
I would bet my life that as he sits at his typewriter and types the word 6 o'clock in the first line of chapter one, he has no idea not only how this chapter will end, but how the book will end. I think he just sits there and just see what flows through him.
He hasn't, when he writes 6 o'clock, he hasn't decided whether it's 6 a.m. or 6 p.m. yet.
Do you think any world where Steve Bruce has even got a solitary post-it up on his wall to remind him of a plot point? Like,
yeah, absolutely not.
I think he's probably watching some kind of daytime TV detective like Columbo or Poirot, and he's cherry-picking moments from it, but he isn't following that episode diligently enough to have an entire thread that makes sense. So he'll be typing away, he'll look up, something will happen, like, I think he was murdered, and he'll go, oh, I'll use that, go back to the typewriter, and by the time he looks up, it's on an episode of Murder, She Wrote, and then he's pulling something else from that mystery.
It's incredible. I'd love to know what Steve Bruce has read. If he does devour detective fiction, has he read all of the Dick Francis books? Has he read lots of Agatha Christie? I'd be fascinated to know what his touch points are.
I think he has, but I think it's trashier than that. I think it's kind of throwaway airport novel detective, because, you know, Christie, she can plot. She can really densely plot a novel. That is not coming across in this book already in chapter one.
No.
I mean, he's got his own age wrong. He's got a single poster on his wall saying 38 and he's misread it as 30.
I also think we should touch on the fact that old Sam is such a cliched name for the old janitor.
Isn't old Sam... No, that's Uncle Sam, isn't it? Who's, sorry.
Yeah. And isn't old Sam... Oh, no, that's Big Sam.
Well, it was a shorter opening chapter, but it was really, like, impactful, I thought.
Great to be back. It is great
to be back.
And it does whet the appetite for next month's chapter. I'm genuinely excited about going on a new journey with Steve Barnes. And I seem to remember this one, it got quite confusing when we were skipping through bits because there was so much to remember. So while Stryker felt like a more kind of... a clear narrative. I feel this is one that's really going to benefit from the real analytical reading of each sentence. Do you, can I ask one final question? What do you think is going on with that bit with the epilepsy? Like, do you think Steve Bruce doesn't even thinks that that's an okay way to behave? Do you think, like, what do you think he thinks?
I think he probably knows someone or has read something that someone said who is actually an epileptic.
Yeah.
Who has said something along those lines. That seems like a mad assumption to make.
Yes.
If you don't have that in your life. I think the issue is that Steve Barnes doesn't know that the old Sam is epileptic. And having just set up the fact that he's not a trained doctor, he's got some first aid training, has just gone, looked at this old man fitting on the floor and gone, oh, well, that must be epilepsy. And also that guy that I met at dinner party said he really hated it when he'd wake up in hospital after having a fit and he would just wish people would leave him alone. And he's converged those two things and has basically got blood on his hands.
Yes. Yeah, because I think that guy means my wife, who knows I'm epileptic, she knows how to deal with my epileptic fits. That's what Steve Barnes has heard, is someone with epilepsy say, I don't go to a hospital every time I have an epileptic fit because the people close to me know how to deal with it. He hasn't gone, yeah. I hope if I have an epileptic fit in the street, no one dares take me to hospital.
How much blood is on the hands of the person who told Steve Bruce that he didn't like being taken to hospital? What a sort of sliding doors moment.
Would you feel bad if that person was you?
Yeah, I would.
Like, if you were the one that had said to Steve Barnes, yeah, look, I've got epilepsy and, you know, it's really frustrating if I have a fit in Westfield and then I wake up in fucking A&E. Like, it's just a nightmare. And then you'd see it register with him. And then a couple of months later, you read that he's just nonchalantly let an old man die of an insulin-based coma because of some information you'd given him. I'd feel awful.
Do you know what, though? Also, if I was at a dinner party and the person I was sat next to was a football manager who'd recently been accused of murder and shot at in a football stadium, the chances of talking about myself are so small. I would have so many questions about his life that I would never let the conversation turn to the mundanities of my epilepsy. I would have infinite questions about, like, if I met a football manager, I'd be interested. If I met a football manager who'd recently been cleared of murder, wouldn't you just want to talk to them about it?
There's a dinner party, you get there, Steve Bruce is there. If you've got epilepsy, do you just want to clear up? Just go, oh, by the way, before we get talking, if I do have a fit, don't take me to the hospital. I'll just come around. I want to ask you some more questions.
Yeah. I don't want this conversation
okay,
to end.
Question one, what do you do all day?
Yeah, question two, what was it like? What does it feel like to be under suspicion of murder?
Question three is, how fit is Julie?
Question four, how's the ground share going?
Well, it certainly is wet the whistle. We'll be back in March with chapter two. I'll give you a sneak peek. It begins with, we didn't have a game until the following Tuesday. It was against Burnwick. So that's something to look forward to, isn't it?
Next right.
Yeah. See you then.
There you go. That's chapter one of Sweeper. If you want to get all the chapters of Sweeper and all the chapters from the first book and the second, you can sign up for the Quickly Kevin fan club at anotherslice.com/QuicklyKevin and also on your Apple podcast app. We'll see you on the 22nd of April for Glenn Hoddle and Cry Emoji, the final series of Quickly Kevin.